I'm author and critic David Agronoff. I'm a horror and science fiction author, critic, and researcher. In this podcast, I wanted to provide in-depth interviews and panel discussions with everyone from New York Times bestselling authors to researchers, musicians, and anyone I find interesting. Welcome to Postcards from a Dying World.
Welcome to a special solo episode of Postcards from a Dying World. It's just me, David Agronoff, your host, talking about all the books that I read in 2023. My reading goal last year was 100 and I got 105, so I hit it. So I put my reading goal at 105 and I'm about 110 now. This is almost everything that I read. There's a couple things that are on my reading list that are like short story collections where I may have only read a couple of the short stories, but I included the whole book. So I'm not doing reviews of that. And part of that is that I put them on my reading list because they were things I read, but they're not full books. But maybe that's cheating. I don't know. But part of it is I wrote the foreword for a collection of Philip K. Dick books. Anyways, one of the things that's different is you'll see a link in this podcast to Buy Me a Coffee account. I spend a lot of time doing these podcasts and book reviews, and I don't get paid for them. So, and that's okay. But if you really, you know, I get a lot of people tell me that they find books from my book reviews. And that, you know, I know you guys are listening to the podcast. So if you're having a good time, if you're enjoying the content, then yeah, consider giving me a donation and putting some time, you know, into the, or paying for the time that I'm putting into this. So last year I recorded this episode where I did a thumbnail review of every book I read. And a lot of you watched it and a lot of you listened to it and I was surprised. So so I'm going to do it again. And apparently I'm going to start doing this every year. Now, if you want more detailed discussion of some of my favorite reads of the year, I will be recording a Best Reads of the Year podcast with Judge Mark Rothenberg, as I do every year. And so look for that. That's coming soon. There's already the my favorite movies of the year with Anthony Trevino and Issa Diao that is in this feed. So if you're a regular, you've already had a chance to look or listen to that. And the one thing I want to say before I get started is, and I got the cover back here hanging over my shoulder, is my book from Clash Books, Last Night to Kill Nazis, should be available at all Barnes and Nobles nationally. And I certainly would appreciate it if you win it, if you go in and at least ask for it and, you know, find it on the shelf, send me a picture, tag me. I want to, you know on Instagram or whatever, where these are showing up at Barnes and Nobles. So in January last year, let's get started on the reads. Okay. In January, The first book I finished of the year was Worlds of Wonder, How to Write Science Fiction and Fantasy by David Gerrold, who I've interviewed here on the podcast about his most recent science fiction novel, Hella. David is awesome, and he, you know, he's most famous for writing Trouble with Tribbles when he was a very young man, and he kind of was an unsung hero in developing the next generation, even though he kind of got screwed on that. But he has a lot to say about the writing of science fiction and fantasy. And, you know, as somebody who's writing it and reading it, I could have used this a couple of years ago, but I think if you're just starting, this is a great place to start. A really great book about writing. And he used to teach at Pepperdine writing, and there's a lot of his lessons in there. The first novel I finished of the year was Hyde by Kirsten White, who is a San Diego, at least county. I'm not sure she lives in the city, but lives in San Diego County. San Diego writer. It's about a haunted amusement park. And maybe, I don't know, I wasn't quite feeling this book. You know, it's awesome. She also just recently wrote an Obi-Wan novel, so I'm super jealous of that. but it's a good novel. I didn't connect with it very deeply. I also started reading the Star Trek Year Four comic books, and at the end of last year, I read the one written by DC Fontana because I was working on, speaking of David Gerrold, they were best friends. So I don't have much to say about there. There's one of these year four and year five Star Trek comics that really hit me, and I'll get to that one when I get there. But I didn't really connect. I mean, I liked them, but I just don't have a lot of memory of them. So the next short novel I read was Glorious Fiends by Bonnie Jo Stufflebean. Who is a Texas writer who I met just randomly. We were sitting near each other at a Sam J. Miller book signing at Mysterious Galaxies, and then she offered to send me her book. And it's a really cool story of like misfits and found families and, you know, a misfit love story, which is kind of neat. It's a very kind of weird, somewhat grotesque horror novel. It's short, but it's cool. It's cool. It's neat. Not entirely my thing, but I respect it. And then I read The Word for World is Forest by Ursula K. Le Guin, and I have a very detailed review of that one up, partially because I was invited to be on a Ursula Le Guin podcast to talk about this book, and then the podcast kind of died, and I never ended up like using all my notes. So I might have to do an episode of this show about that just to use my notes that I had for it. But if you haven't read the Word for World is Forest, it was originally published in Dangerous Visions, so it's a very short novel, and it's one of Le Guin's like most kind of mainstream science fiction, but it's very good. It's a Vietnam allegory, but yeah, it's good stuff. I definitely recommend it. It's short, and it's not as dense as some of the later Ursula Le Guin stuff. So the next thing I read is another San Diego local, and that's Jim Rulin's Corporate Rock Sucks: The Rise and Fall of SST Records. And I did an interview with Jim on this podcast about this book. So if you want to know more about it, SST was a groundbreaking punk rock label, mostly connected to like Black Flag and like the Descendants and Husker Du. And it's the story of that label, and it's a very good book. It's very well researched. Jim has found a pretty good niche doing punk rock biographies. He did Bad Religion and Heath from the Circle Jerks. So really cool book. Now, one of my label mates, as it were, or publishing press mates, Clash Books, Anybody Home by Michael Seidlinger, I think is how you say his name. And this is like a second person home invasion novel. It's very experimental. And it's pretty much a very genius horror novel. It's not for everybody because it is so weird and so experimental in style and tone. So it's got a lot of weird stuff going on. So that was January. So in February of 2023, the first thing I read was Star Trek Year Five, Number One, Odyssey's End. Again, I don't have like deep thoughts on it. I read Sell Out, the major label feeding frenzy that swept punk, emo, and hardcore 1994 to 2007 by Dan Ozzie. And this is like the story of like Green Day and Jawbreaker and all these bands that, you know, went to major labels. There's some Blink 182, which I didn't really know any history of them, even though they're from here. I was already like too hardcore to listen to Blink 182 when they came out. But you know, some of this is really interesting for me. I saw Green Day when in Bloomington, and 8 people were there. So like seeing the rise of that band was really interesting. And so reading this book was interesting. Yeah, so I read another nonfiction book next, which was A Long Time Ago in a Cutting Room Far, Far Away, My 50 Years Editing Hollywood Hits from Carrie, Star Wars, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Mission Impossible, and more by Paul Hirsch. And this is the story of a dying art form, because movie editing is like a, you know, like now that everything can be done digitally and you know, people can edit movies from their laptops. It's a very different, you know, art form. And so this is a really kind of important, cool book. And it has lots of details about storytelling. There's a really important part of this book where he tells a story of how they just moved in Star Wars. They moved dialogue around in the scene between Luke and Obi-Wan, like, they move some of the dialogue from the beginning of the scene to the end of the scene and how it changed the movie completely. And I don't want to give it away, but that's a really important lesson in storytelling that's in this book. And that's like an example of something that was really cool about it. So the next novel I read was Head Cleaner by David James Keaton. And I had David on this here podcast to talk about this book. It's a book of like tiny details and large themes, interesting characters, and it's a really cool concept. It's like a time travel story about video stores and VCRs. It's like a time traveling VCR. It's hard to explain, but it's jam packed with ideas and it's very entertaining, and it's kind of a sci-fi horror hybrid. And I had a lot of fun reading it, and I have definitely suggest reading it and checking out the episode that I did with him. And right after that, the last book I read in February was The Passenger by Cormac McCarthy. And we lost him this last year. He passed away, and that's not why I read it. I read it because it was the most recent one. I don't think he had died yet when I read The Passenger. He's a master, but his books are not for everybody. And I changed my ranking from what I first thought. Like at first I gave it 4 stars, and then I kind of like bumped it up the more I thought about it when I started writing about it, which happens from time to time. Because it took me a little bit of time to process it. And you know, there's a lot of weird, as always with Cormac McCarthy, there's weird stuff. He doesn't follow the rules. He makes up his own rules. So you know, that's kind of the way it goes with him. And there's a kind of a book that goes with us called Stella Mars, and I'll get to that eventually. And I hated that, but I liked The Passenger. And unfortunately, Stella Mars is where he goes out, but I'll get to that in a bit. So yeah, March of 2023. And I think there's a lot in here because I took a trip on spring break, maybe. Maybe that's why. I don't know. I read a lot in March. I started with Star Trek Year 5, The Wine Dark Deep by Jackson Lansing. And this one was really interesting because it has a couple different stories, like Star Trek short stories within the context of it. And the first one was featuring a Tholian child, where the Enterprise saves a Tholian child. You remember the Tholian web, and they're very weird aliens, and they were briefly in Enterprise. Yeah, that's a really interesting story, and it adds a lot to the Tholian lore, and there's not a lot of lore about their species, so I really like that. But the best storyline I read in all the Star Trek comics was one where it's kind of like Sulu meets the Shape of Water, and Sulu has like this love story with this aquatic alien species, and Yeah, it is like Sulu meets Shape of Water, and it's very good. And I really love that story. That's the best Star Trek comic story I've read in a long time. And I read a lot of Star Trek comics. So next I read a nonfiction book called The Milky Way, Autobiography of Our Galaxy by Moya McTeer, who was a regular guest on the Weekly Space Hangout, which is one of my favorite astronomy podcasts that's no longer with us. They don't do it anymore. I traded a few emails with Moya, but I couldn't quite figure out the time to get her on the podcast. She does her own podcast called Exolore. That's very interesting, where they just like make up planets and then have discussions about these fictional planets. It's a very interesting podcast. I've listened to a couple episodes of it. But yeah, The Milky Way, The Autobiography of Our Galaxy, it's written like a first person narrative of of our galaxy talking about itself. So it's a high concept nonfiction book. So interesting. Okay, the first book that I'm pretty sure is on my best or favorite reads of the year of new releases is Maru by SB Divya. And I interviewed Divya for both of her last two books, Machine Hood and for Maru. And I highly recommend that interview as well as the book. This is more than just a science fiction story. And Divya has stated in interviews that this is kind of a utopian look at how our species might be able to survive and kind of a resistance to negative dystopias. And this is a very weird far future space travel book with like living with like humans that are augmented to live in space and giant living spaceship people and all kinds of weird, interesting stuff. I loved Meru. It's everything you want in science fiction. So really good. I read another Star Trek graphic novel, Star Trek Discovery Aftermath by Kristen Beyer and Mike Johnson, who are writers for Discovery. And the first half of this graphic novel takes place after the events of season two and kind of wraps up some storylines from there. And so that, of course, has Captain Pike and Spock and is really fun stuff. And then there's also a Saru story set on Discovery, back in the timeline. And that's interesting too, but not quite as interesting, anyways, as the first story. So the next thing I read was a nonfiction book called The Biggest Ideas in the Universe by Sean Carroll, who's one of my favorite physicists. And this one, I really loved his book, The Big Picture. This one was just kind of like his thought experiments from the pandemic, and he worked out a lot of these ideas on his podcast. And since I listened to his podcast, I felt like this was a little redundant for me. And some of these ideas are a little bit too esoteric for people who aren't physicists. So some of this I just kind of found myself like kind of not really understanding what was going on, really enjoying it. And then I read another Star Trek graphic novel, which was Star Trek: The Q Conflict, which was, and I did not like this. Q's not one of my favorite villains, and this was a bunch of fan service goop, because what it did was it put all the crews from all the ships that existed at that time, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Star Trek, and mixed them up and in the Q continuum, and then they had to like battle against each other. So you have Kirk and Riker working together, and Sisko and somebody from Voyager, and Spock and Sisko, I think, were working together. And then, like, This was just fan service goop, and I, you know, didn't really enjoy it. I don't remember what I rated it. Maybe I gave it a nicer rating there, but my memory of it was not very good. So the next novel I read was The Summer of City, Summer in the City of Roses by Michelle Ru 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 Ruiz Ruiz Kyle. And this novel is kind of like a light fantasy and mostly the story of a brother and sister set in like a fictional Oregon town who end up like on the streets in Portland. And as somebody who used to live in Portland, I enjoyed the Portland aspects of this as they end up like kind of punk rocking around Portland. And there's some gender queer stuff going on with the characters, and it was good. It was not entirely my thing, and you know, like I'm not saying like it's great. Oh, you know what I just realized? I did a Discovery review and didn't point out that I'm wearing a Discovery hat. Anyways, but yeah, Summer in the City of Roses is. I read about it in the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction. Somebody there gave it a really good review. They liked it more than I did. I liked it. It was fine. Then I read one of the weirdest, silliest retro reads that I read of the year, which was Point Ultimate, a 1955 novel by Jerry Soule. And Jerry Soule was a writer on the Outer Limits, and he ghost wrote some Twilight Zones. Like when Charles Beaumont died, he left some of his scripts kind of, they needed some passes. And Jerry Soule was a guy who did that. He also wrote the Carbonite Maneuver, which was the first aired episode of Star Trek. Or no, it was the first filmed. First aired was George Clayton Johnson's The Man Trap. But Carbonite Maneuver was the first one to go before cameras. And it aired 10th, I think. Anyways, Point Ultimate by Jerry Soule. This could have been a QAnon novel, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to read it, because when I read about it, it was like, you know, set in 1999, written in 1955, and he thought we'd be living in a plague-ravaged communist dystopia. And it's funny, Bantam put on the cover 1999, incredible and prophetic. The story of the US conquered and freedom from the stars. So they give away the ending of the book on the cover. And this novel about a communist, so it feels like it could have been written on a QAnon message board. And it has forced vaccinations and, communists have taken over America, and there are robot waiters and bartenders and flying cars and that are called turbos. So there was some kind of fun stuff about reading this, but mostly it was like a weird ick factor, and it is just odd that this book is like really does read like a QAnon message board but written in 1955. Now I remember I did take a trip on this because the next book I read, the next book I read on Flight to Indiana. So I remember that. And that's Iraq Plus 100, the first anthology of science fiction from Iraq. And the idea was to imagine Iraq 100 years in the future. There's also a Palestine one. In this series, and this is a really important anthology, and it's very good, and there's lots of different really good stories in there, and it was great. And I read that, and my homie Desmond Reddick, who's my first and most trusted reader. His novel, Mother of Abominations, which was part of a series called Monster Earth, which is like a kaiju shared universe thing. And Mother of Abominations is a really fun novel. Des is my friend. So we have similar tastes, and so there was a chance I was gonna like it. There's nothing like super groundbreaking here, but Des, what he's doing is he's writing a really solid, like, Cold War and kaiju story. And he did a really good job of combining those elements. This was his first novel, and it does show a little bit of first novel growing pains, but you know, that's to be expected. And Des wrote another novel after this that I read that's not released, called And Kid Ghost. I believe that's the title, but it's like a superhero novel, like a noir. That book is incredible. And I know he says he needs to do another draft on it, and he has not published it, but unfortunately, I'm telling you about a novel that is not out there. I don't know what to tell you. And then the other book I read on that trip was The Divine Invasion by Philip K. Dick, which we covered for the Dickheads podcast. And that was the last book I read in March. So Divine Invasion, like, if you want to hear me talk about that book, there's a whole Dickheads episode about it. In fact, like, we kind of did two, because I also interviewed did an episode about the Judaism connections, and those are some of my Phil books there. But Divine Invasion is the last science fiction novel that Philip K. Dick wrote, and it's like awesomely out of date. He doesn't try to write like an 80s modern, you know, it was 1980 when he wrote it, and he didn't really try to write a modern science fiction novel. He just wrote a Philip K. Dick science fiction novel, and there's lots of really interesting theological ideas in there. It's kind of spiritually a sequel to Valis. It's considered the second book in the Valis trilogy, which I don't really honestly believe that he finished. A lot of people say that his last novel was book three, but I'll get to that in a bit because I read that this year too. But yeah, I Divine Invasion is great. It's a very weird book. And the kind of the opening, which is the science fictional version of his relationship with his friend Doris Saunter, who lived next door to him, is kind of science fictionalized with these two people that live in bubbles, you know, right by him, and or live right near each other. Anyways, I'm sorry, I got distracted for a second. But yeah, the next book I read was PKD Adjacent. His third wife, Ann Dick, wrote The Search for Philip K. Dick, which is like her biography of him. I've got it sitting right here. You know, Ann could have hated Phil, and she certainly could have crushed him publicly. And it seems that, you know, she could have done that, but she was really trying to understand him and try to get through to him, or through to what was Phil. This is a really important book for people who want to understand Philip K. Dick, or people who are like serious dickheads. If you're not a serious dickhead, I don't think you need to read it. But if you're one of those people that have read every novel and you want to talk about Philip K. Dick and you want to be a scholar like me, I like this book was awesome. And you know, as to you know, where it ranks on the nonfiction books about Phil, I'm personally, Divine Invasions is as up there, and then The Divine Madness of Phil K. Dick I think is really good too. And this was while I was writing unfinished PKD, so I hope to have a book up there in that pantheon. But my book Unfinished BKD was in progress when I read that. Next novel I read, excuse me, was Pallbearers Club by Paul Tremblay. And, Paul's writing on several levels here, and I think this is a writer's novel, and I'm not sure how well it will work for the general reader. It's not as shocking or as horror as Cabin at the End of the World. It's not as nail-biting as Survivor Song, but and it has a little bit more in common with Head Full of Ghosts, but this is a really cool and subtle horror novel. I really dug it. It didn't end up on my best of the year list, but I'm pretty sure I interviewed Paul about this book, so it's on the podcast feed, so you can hear more about it there. Around that time, I started reading for there's an episode of this podcast about the best science fiction novels of 1968, where Lisa Jazyk, Brian Collins, and I debate what was the best science fiction novel that came out in 1968. And the first one that I read from that year, some of them I had read before, so I didn't need to reread them. But of the ones that I hadn't read before was Nova by Samuel R. Delaney. And is this a masterpiece? It has all the ingredients: the world building, fascinating characters, fun sci-fi concepts, including a supernova in the third act, technology of like cyborg studs and how they operate on the ships that it borders on. It's like almost cyberpunk, a decade before that literary movement was even birthed. So, and there's lots of obsession and greed and revenge in the story, and there's a meta commentary on the genre itself. So, yeah, this is a really cool science fiction novel, and it is worthy of being in the debate for the best of 1968. And you can call me crazy because I don't think he would have considered himself to be as polished a writer then, but I like Babel 17 a little better. This might be objectively a better science fiction novel, but I like Babel 17 more. I might have to reread that again. So after I read that, I read She Is a Haunting by Trang Van Tran, I think is the name of the author, Vietnamese American author. And this is a haunted house novel set in that draws on the author's experience of visiting family back home in Vietnam. And so it's the haunting, haunted house novel has this unique setting in the Vietnamese countryside, and it was good. It was really good. Not mind-bending or super terribly original. It has a, the really cool setting that was part of it. Camp Concentration by Thomas Dish was the second book I read for that 1968 podcast debate panel. It was the last book I read in April. Camp Concentration, yeah. And it's one of those novels that doesn't really depend on story, plot, or narrative drive. It's kind of like a experimental novel about it's kind of like a combination between Flowers of Algeron and Punishment and the movie Punishment Park, which is a very obscure like 60s radical movie, which you should see. Punishment Park, it's a really weird movie, it's great. But it kind of has the same story as Flowers for Algeron. So I know people have their there are people, I think Paul Weimer, who was supposed to be on the 68 podcast, but we couldn't figure out the timing with him. He loves this novel. He thinks it's the best. He was the one that said that he thought this was the best novel of 1968. I didn't really like it. Just gotta be honest with you. And the fact that it has the same plot as Flowers for Algeron makes it even less impressive, because it's like people engineered to be super smart, and they get made prisoners and blah blah blah. Well, every year when I do my best reads of the year podcast, my homie Judge Mark Rothenberg usually will tell me, "I'm going to send you this book." And I went out to Indiana, so when I went out to Indiana, he gave me a bunch of books. Two of which I actually did read this year. And the first one was Sour Candy by Keelan Patrick Burke. It's a horror novella. It's subtle but creepy. It imagine a child who's like a cosmic monster who shows up and says he's your child, but you don't remember him. and he won't go away. But it's like kind of similar to the Babadook, but not as annoying. And a really good horror novella. The next book I read for the best of 1968 was Picnic in Paradise by Joanna Russ. Picnic in Paradise is sneaky good. It's a novel that rewards like deep dives and, you know, like studying it and rereading it and looking at it, like I did for writing the review and for the 68 podcast. Lisa Yazyk, Professor Lisa Yazyk, came on to suggest it as a best of 1968. And I have criminally not read enough Joanna Russ, and sitting right underneath me at my TBR is The Female Man, and I will read more Joanna Russ this year. That is a promise. Next year, there's going to be more retro reads than brand new reads, and so you're going to get more Joanna Russ reviewed from me. Okay. Stella Maris by Cormac McCarthy sucked. It's an entire book about a character and his doctor in a psychiatric hospital. It's 181 pages of dialogue, no speech tags, no quotations. And I know Cormac McCarthy was a zero fucks given author, but this just, it's like eating nothing but peanut butter and chocolate straight, like for like a month. It's just like, yes, he doesn't use grammar, but at this point, with absolutely not, I just found this to be a mess. And it's not really a story; it's just kind of like supplemental to The Passenger. And so, yeah, no thanks, not into it. And the next novel I read was The Terraformers by Anna Lee Newitz. You know, this book, I saw this author at an event with SB Divya at Mysterious Galaxies, and really enjoyed the event. This is a really cool science fiction novel. I'm surprised that, you know, if you'd asked me when I read it, I just assumed it would make my best of the year list, and just like stuff kept knocking, you know, like being a little better and a little better, in my opinion. But this is a really weird novel that takes place over generations. It's like, imagine a better version. This is about terraforming of a planet over generations and generations, and AI and augmented animals, and but it's almost like a political science fiction novel. And I actually would love to have talked about some of the things that were going on in it with my father, who's a political scientist, because there's lots of stuff about bureaucracy in this book. And so I recommend The Terraformers by Anna Lee Newitz. One of the reasons why it'll seem like I didn't quite have 100, I might not have 100, exactly 105 reviews, even though I had 108 books read on Goodreads, is that I'm a subscriber to the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction, edited by Sherry Renee Thomas. And so they are the length of books, so I don't feel like I'm cheating if I read a 200 page issue of the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction. And I read every issue this year, and there was some really good stuff. And so I just wanted to point that out here, that I was reading that, and I discovered lots of cool authors from that. And the last book I read in April was The Homie, The Sensei, the author I learned the most from, my favorite author, the guy that I have like 60 books of sitting here on the shelf, John Shirley. I reread Demons, his horror novel from the year 2000. In the year 2000. Yeah. And Demons started as a novella, and then he added a second part to make it, flesh it out into a novel. And the first novella is absolutely a masterpiece novella. The second part of the novel is good. It is not as good as the masterpiece first half. And it is the story of how these giant environmental disasters like ExxonMobil, the Exxon Valdez, or Bhopal, like, were engineered by these ultra-capitalists to raise these demons, and it is a great environmental novel and awesome. So May, my books that I read in May. So the first book I read in May was The Future is Female, Volume 2, edited by Lisa Yazyk, who is one of my favorite guests on either podcast that I do. And I had Lisa on to talk about The Future is Female, too. So you can get more details there. These are stories of second wave feminism because this is the 70s. So the first Future is Female is like a bunch of short stories collected by women writing science fiction between the years of like 1927 and 69. And this is the 70s. So second wave feminism and explores environmentalism, post-male societies, first menstruation, and like all kinds of weird and interesting things. It's fairly or unfairly the science fiction genre is pointed as a boys club. This is proof that it is not. Some of these stories come from major magazines or major published things, and some were from fanzines. And Lisa had a really interesting process in putting this one together, so I recommend that you go listen to that episode. So the next thing I read in May will be high on my best reads of the year. I'm not going to say where. You'll have to watch that episode to find out. But The Mountain in the Sea by Ray Naylor. When Stranger in a Strange Land came out, it was supposed to be like the science fiction movement, like, or a science fiction novel that was like a movement, and like hippies everywhere were excited about it, and it was this big deal, and folks talked about grokking stuff, and I wish that this novel had that effect, because decades from now you could be talking about how we started to understand our place in the global ecosystem of Earth from reading Ray Naylor's Mountain in the Sea. This is a very Stanislaw Lem like novel. I had Ray on the podcast, and probably the biggest flex I've ever heard on the podcast, and one of the funniest things, is when Ray Naylor's like, well, when I read Stanislaw Lem, I read him in his original Russian. And I was like, that is an awesome flex. This is a masterpiece. This is an absolute masterpiece of science fiction, and you should read it and go listen to my interview with Ray Naylor. It is awesome. So, yeah, really into that book. Next, I read Juicy Ghosts by Rudy Rutger, the Mad Rutger himself. And this, Rudy's science fiction is hilarious. He writes as weird science fiction as it gets. Like, he's proto bizarro. And this story is about technology, immortality, presidential election. It was obviously written in 2020 and reacting to those things. It's very Rudy Rucker style. It's self-published. I don't think he wanted to deal with editors or anything. Like, I think he's just over that stuff. And sometimes some of this gets a little so weird that you're like, I'm not quite sure what's going on. But it's very, very funny. I just started communicating with Rudy about coming on the podcast. I don't think he likes doing podcast interviews, but I'm trying to work on him. to do that. So keep your eyes peeled for that. The next thing I read was Philip K. Dick and Philosophy. Do Androids Have Kindred Spirits? Edited by D.E. Whitaker. And he's the editor of somebody I've interviewed for background on Unfinished PKD, but I haven't had him on the podcast yet. This is a part of that open court, like, you know, Man in the High Castle in Philosophy, Breaking Bad in Philosophy, and like they take whatever popular show or popular thing. And but this is pretty good. This came out around the time of the Adjustment Bureau, so it's very heavy. Weirdly enough, for the Adjustment Bureau, which is a PKD movie that we crucified on Dickheads and famously Anthony despised. So there's a lot of that in here. About half of the essays are awesome. The other half, not so good. Give the editor, D.E. Whitaker, a lot of credit. He did an entire essay backwards about Counterclock World, and that's hilarious. So I read that, and I read Raw Deal, Hidden Corruption, Corporate Greed, and the Fight for the Future of Meat by Chloe Sorvino. And as a vegan, a lot of this information is stuff that I'm glad is getting out there. This is a really important book about, you know, updating a lot of the issues that are going on with climate change and like the horrible ways that the meat industry is just awful, terrible, terrible thing. This author makes a lot of excuses for it. And there's like a really weird part where she like kind of like fetishizes eating meat, like even though she knows that it's, that the industry is really, really terrible. So yeah, that really turned me off. That was really gross. But you know, that could be my vegan bias, but I make no apologies for that. Meat is murder and dairy is rape, and I hate those industries. So yeah. Moving on. Lone Women by Victor Laval. I expected a grim frontier tale. This is like a weird horror Western. It's a very feminist weird horror Western. And Victor Laval, as a male writer, is very good at writing stories with those kinds of themes, i.e. see The Changeling, the TV series based on his novel, which gets more into those themes than the novel actually does. But that's partially because it has a woman showrunner, and she expanded the story, and I think Victor was very, really happy with the way it was done. The novel never felt like a chore or a slog to me. Lone Woman, I've seen some people think it was a little slow. The pace is a little slow, but it had some really, really great moments, and I personally found it to be a page turner. I don't know what people are talking about. I thought Lone Woman by Victor Laval was great. And then the last book I read in May was False Dawn by Chelsea Quinn Yarborough. I had to take a train trip up to LA. I don't remember what it was for. And I read this mostly on the train, I think. And False Dawn is one of, like, it's an environmental apocalypse novel. There's a short story that takes place in the same universe that was in The Future is Female, and that's where I heard of it from. I tried to get Chelsea Quinn Yarborough on the podcast because she's doing a new reissue of this. But, it didn't happen. but this is it has the bleakest meat cute in the history of stories. It is one of the bleakest, darkest end of the world environmental apocalypse novels you'll ever read. It was my best retro read of the year. I was once on a panel with Yarborough talking about vampires. She's most famous for writing a series of vampire novels. This was super brutal, intense book. So in June of 2023, I did take a train trip to Riverside, California, to do research for Unfinished PKD at the archives and the Riverside Library, which has an amazing collection of Philip K. Dick books and has papers from Ann Dick's papers. And oh man, I'm brain farting the other lady's name, but there's a woman that he briefly dated in the 70s, and her papers are at Riverside. And so I took the bus and train combination up there, and I did a lot of nonfiction Philip K. Dick reading on that trip. So the first of which was What If Our World Is Their Heaven? The Final Conversation of Philip K. Dick, where he it's like one of the last two interviews that he gave, and it's just a transcript of the interview. And I read the whole thing, or it's a transcript of two different interviews, but I read the whole thing and highlighted it between here and Los Angeles on the bus. And it was interesting because we passed Santa Ana, where the interview was given, and he lived not too far from the 5 freeway. So that was interesting having that, or thinking about that while I was reading it. It's a really interesting book. The main reason why it's interesting is that he lays out, like, he had a contract for a science fiction novel called Owl in the Daylight, and he chased four concepts for Owl in the Daylight. And in this interview, the fourth and last concept that he claimed was going to be Owl in the Daylight, he lays out the story idea, and it's like it would have been a masterpiece. And the title of this book comes from that concept, and you can read about it in Unfinished PKD, which is coming from Antiopedias Press and part of the Philip K. Dick Studies series. Oh, I probably shouldn't have announced that. But anyways, well, if anybody notices, I'll be making an official announcement about it soon anyways. So yeah, there was that. And I also on that trip read Writers of the 21st Century, Philip K. Dick, edited by Martin H. Greenberg and Joseph D. Olander. And this book is a old series of essays. This series, they would have essays about different science fiction writers. And what was curious to me about this was right after Phil died, and these are a bunch of essays about like why Philip K. Dick is a great writer before the Philip K. Dick kind of renaissance, when people started to realize this was like when he was not as respected or known to be as good as we know him to be now. And so these essays are like really arguing for like, hey, you should care about Philip K. Dick. And for that reason, I really, really thought the essays in this were really, really good. And it's one of the best nonfiction books about Philip K. Dick. And it's hard to find. It's out of print. My copy has coffee stains on it, and I'm happy to have it. I also read a graphic novel autobiography called The High Desert by James Spooner, about the Riverside area, because I was going up there and I was interested in learning about it. So it was like interesting timing to read that. And that's a very good story about being a punk rocker, a weirdo, and like this part of that part of the country. And so that was interesting. I also read The Transmigration of Timothy Archer for the Dickheads podcast. That episode is out. This was the last novel that Phil finished before his death. He was planning Owl in the Daylight when he died. He didn't get to write it because it's not science fiction, because it's the story of Bishop Pike. A lot of people believe he was going to transition away from science fiction. That is not true. He was planning Owl in the Daylight. He tried four concepts. All four were science fiction. For Owl in the Daylight, And one of them was even like super pulpy and very 50s. So, but you can read about that in Unfinished PKD. But yeah, The Transmigration of Timothy Archer is considered book three of Valis. I don't believe so, because I don't think he intended it to be the third book in Valis. I think he intended Owl in the Daylight to be the third book of Valis. But because it has spiritual themes, even though it's not connected to Valis at all, they say it's third. A lot of people say it's the third part of the Valis trilogy, and that's just smart marketing, but it's not honest marketing, if you ask me. I don't believe it's the third part of now some people do, and you can hear that debate on the Dickheads podcast. So our episode of The Transmigration of Timothy Archer, I definitely recommend reading it. It's Phil's only first person narrative, and it's his only novel in first person that also has a female lead character who he has at different times said was inspired by one of his daughter Laura, but then also talks about how this character is way smarter than him, and that's like an interesting thing about it. Next, I read No Gods for Drowning by Hayley Piper, who is a amazing horror author, and this is like a horror dark fantasy. I was very intensely knee deep in finishing Unfinished PKD and doing hours and hours of work. I was working like 12 hours a day on that book when I read this. Because so what I would do is I would work for like 10, 12 hours a day on my vacation on Unfinished PKD, and then at the end of the day I would read Haley's book to like kind of decompress. And so I'm not sure is the best way to read that book. It's very similar to Killing on Carnival Row. It's like a fantasy world with like some really dark stuff, horror stuff. It's just not my kind of thing either. Like, it's really good. It's very good. It's just really not my kind of thing. And I was really not in a great headspace to be reading at that point, because it was right around the time I finished Unfinished PKD. And that was like the hardest writing experience of my life, because I've never written a nonfiction book before and it was really intense. Anyways, next I read Nietzsche, The Unmanned Autohagiography by D. Harlan Wilson, my co-host on the Dickheads podcast. And if you've never read Professor Wilson's work, it is hilarious, weird, and surreal. I wrote my review of it. I basically kind of like did a mock autohagiography of L. Ron Hubbard is my kind of response to this. And I was really happy and proud of that review, but I don't think anybody read it. But yeah, it's a very funny book. And if you like Professor Wilson's stuff, you will love it. It's very funny. It's one of the funniest things I read all year. Next, I read a graphic novel, Indiana Jones and the Tomb of the Gods by Rob Williams. I was getting psyched for Dial of Destiny. I rewatched all the Indiana Jones movies and read this graphic novel around the same time. It really does feel like a lost, like Indiana Jones movie. It was very good. I liked it. Nothing groundbreaking or whatever, but yeah. And the last book I read in June was, and maybe leaked a little bit into July, was After Engulfment, Cosmicism and Neo-Cosmicism, Cosmicism in H.P. Lovecraft, Philip K. Dick, Robert A. Heinlein, and Frank Herbert by Ellen J. Greenham. This is a super academic book about PKD and like cosmic horror. This is about like cosmic horror. And so what I think what Ellen Greenham is trying to do is talk about how there's cosmic horror in science fiction. It's not just Lovecraft. Like, she's talking about how like a lot of the themes that Lovecraft explored in his work that you'll find in PKD, Heinlein, Frank Herbert, and Dune, and all that stuff. And this uses really big words. It's a really intense academic book. But I learned a lot, and I really liked her take on things. And she writes a lot about like Three Stigmata, Palmer Eldritch, which is my, what I consider Phil's masterpiece. But I think Phil is the author discussed the most behind PKD. I try really hard to get her on the podcast. She's in Australia, and the timing is very hard to match up with her schedule and our schedule. And but I know Professor Wilson got a copy of that too. So we may discuss that in the future still. And then Our Black Hearts Beat as One by Brian Esmond. And I got a very early copy of this. It is now out. He's going to do like a relaunch thing around Valentine's and do an event at Mysterious Galaxies for the countdown to StokerCon. But this is a punk rock horror weird romance, and I know Brian is very proud of this book. You might know Brian as the author of Man Fuck This House, which is the best title for a haunted house novel ever. This is a really good example of good stuff that can come out of self-publishing or independent publishing, because this is not a kind of mainstream marketable book, but it's got a lot of really cool stuff in it, and it's very weird. It has very cool ideas, and I enjoyed it. And I do think it's one of Brian's best works, and I'm excited for his werewolf novel, Good Dog, that's coming out soon. So that's Our Black Hearts Beat as One by Brian Asman. Next, I read Destroyer of Worlds by Matt Ruff. This is the sequel to Lovecraft Country, and even more so than the first book, it's kind of like a collection of short stories, and I think they're even kind of more loosely connected than the first one. I enjoyed this book. I'm three for three with Matt Ruff. I still think The Mirage, his alternate history 9/11 novel, is his best work. But yeah, I enjoyed this. Don't have a ton to say about it. But next, I listened to an audiobook of Star Trek Discovery, Drastic Measures by Dayton Ward, who I enjoy following on Facebook. I really enjoy his social media presence, but this is a really cool prequel to Discovery about a young Lieutenant Georgiou, Michelle Yeoh's character from the beginning, and Jason Isaacs. Oh God, I'm brain farting the name of his captain. I can't believe that I'm being a bad Star Trek fan. Just got too much going on in my head. Anyways, and they're both, and this is also a prequel to a story that appeared on Star Trek, the original series, which is Kodos the Executioner. This is the backstory of Kodos the Executioner. So you get a little young James Kirk in here too, and how Georgiou and oh God, what was Jason Isaacs' captain's name? He's like a young security officer in this one. This is great. This is really good. I listened to it as an audiobook. So like when I was on walks or on bike rides or like, just cleaning the house, doing that kind of thing. And I mean, this was great. That's how I like to consume Star Trek novels. If I can find them on audiobooks, you'll see I have a couple of those coming up here. And that one was great. Next, I read Drek by Cliff Jones Jr. And Drek, Cliff came out to speak at Comic-Con and PKD, so we hung out the night before with him and Keith Giles, who is my publisher for Acquire. And Drek is, I described it as part drug, part nano. Oh well, he describes Drek in the novel as part drug, part nanotech, part biological material. And I kind of described Drek, the novel, as part surreal, part humor, part science fictional material. It's kind of Pink Bame, like Philip K. Dick inspired. He calls it dream punk. There's some Easter egg Philip K. Dick stuff in there. It's short. It's like 114 pages, and it's really cool. Another example of indie publishing that, you know, a 114 page novel. Well, I guess Tor is doing more of those these days. But it's a little harder to sell something like that in that length. And but I'm glad he did because it was good. So the next audio book I listened to on the Libby app, the on my phone, which is a library app. So it was Star Trek Strange New Worlds, The High Country by John Jackson Miller. And this is a Strange New Worlds like Captain Pike. This feels like a big episode of the series, like a two-parter or something. And Uhura and Pike and Una get separated from each other on a landing party and a way mission, and they all have to deal with this low-tech population to figure out like why they can't beam out, why the technology won't work. There's a cool mystery, cool story. It's great character stuff. Enjoyed it quite a bit. I also read The Person on the Other Side of This Book by Samuel J. Tanner. And I should note that Cliff Jones Jr. came on my podcast. So I did cover Drek on this show and two books back. I also talked to Samuel J. Tanner, the author of The Person on the Other Side of This Book. This is a very Vonnegut-influenced, like, meta, sci-fi, hilarious. It's very Robert Sheckley or Douglas Adams, like, sci-fi comedy. I laughed a lot reading it. It also has a little bit of Maltzberg, although Tanner had never heard of Maltzberg, but it felt like Maltzberg. So it's a fun book. Another person I had on the podcast, Boys in the Valley by Philip Fracassi. This will be one of the top reads of the year. It's one of the best horror novels of the year. This is a like just after the Civil War era orphanage, demonic possession, maybe horror novel, historical horror, just really, really awesome. Tour de force, great writing, great moments, excellent description of what demonic possession or addiction might feel like if you're being driven by something else. That reminded me of Wet Bones by John Shirley. But I interviewed Philip recently. I wasn't able to interview him at the time when I read it, but I interviewed him recently, so that's up on the podcast feed, not far back. And then the last thing I read in August was, or in July, was the second Star Trek Picard Second Self by Una McCormick. Una is one of my favorite Star Trek writers, and she proved it here. This takes place between season, one and two of Picard, and I don't think this is a spoiler because like I kind of saw it coming, but it's a spy story with Raffi and Seven, and Una's favorite Star Trek character, who she would always write about, is Elam Garrick, who is my favorite Star Trek character from Deep Space Nine, and Garrick is in this. And you should want to read it for that alone. Okay. Yeah. All right. So August. Yeah, this was an intense month of reading. I'm kind of looking ahead. So I read The Man Whose Teeth Were All Alike by Philip K. Dick for the podcast. We've recorded this episode. I don't think it's out yet. Because we are taking our dear sweet time with that. Man Whose Teeth Were All Alike is a non-science fiction novel, and it wasn't published till after his death, and it's not great. But You'll find out whenever the episode comes out, my detailed thoughts on it. Then I read A Labyrinth by Michael J. Wilson, which was gifted to me by the publisher, Stalking Horse Press, James Reich. And this is the narrative. It's like a narrative prose poem kind of thing, and it's a retelling of some kind of, I don't remember which myth, but it's a retelling of, and it is a classy piece of work. Maybe too classy for me. But it's a classy book. It's very good. And then I read Homage to Catalonia by George Orwell, which was a reread about the Spanish Civil War. And everyone should read Homage to Catalonia. This should be the most important book by George Orwell. This was his personal story of war and his experience being in the war. And everyone should read it. And then I read a pre-release copy of Counterfeit Worlds, The Cinematic Universes of Philip K. Dick by Brian J. Robb. And you're saying a pre-release? Wait, that book came out a long time ago. It did. It got updated because there's new Philip K. Dick movies and TV shows, and it's great. It's an incredible book. And as somebody who just finished researching and writing a Philip K. Dick book, I only found one mistake, which is impressive. Not to nitpick, but it's because it's something that is not, he comments on one of the unfinished books of PKD, which is something I know a lot about. And yeah, I shouldn't really highlight this because it's great. It's really good. Brian J. Robb did a good job. And he was trusting other people when he was quoting the thing that was wrong. He just said that Earthshaker was not a genre novel, that it was a mainstream novel, and it was not. Earthshaker was his first attempt at writing a novel. It was a Gnostic fantasy. But he hadn't read it. Only like 10 people in the world have read it, and I happen to be one of them. So that's why I know that. Anyways, but Counterfeit Worlds by Brian J. Robb, here I can, this is right here. Very good. Very good. Definitely pick that one up if you like reading about Philip K. Dick adjacent stuff. Speaking of Philip K. Dick adjacent, how about the book that won the Philip K. Dick Award last year, The Extractionist by Kimberly Unger? That was the next book I read. And this is like kind of cyberpunky. And look, there's been virtual reality mind-bending novels since Shockwave Rider by John Bruner. Kind of think that one's better and more impressive because that was written in the 70s. Because this is 20 years after The Matrix has happened. So like, if you're writing something 20 years before The Matrix, it's more impressive than writing something 20 years after The Matrix. The title character is an extractionist whose job is to pull people out of sims when they don't want to be pulled out of them, which is, and this is kind of globe trotting from Singapore to San Francisco. And it has kind of like a James Bondy thing. It's good. It's good. It's not great, but it's good. And I liked it. I'm not sure I would have given the award. I would have given it an award, but I'm not a Philip K. Dick Award judge. The Deluge by Stephen Markley. This is a doorstop book, and I read it on the book tour for The Last Night to Kill Nazis. Shout out to Artifact Books. So I read it on my way to Artifact Books. Where I got this t-shirt. And that was an awesome event. The John Shirley, Cody Goodfellow, and me event at Artifact, and then read it on the train to LA. And I kind of regretted taking it because it's like this thing, it's like 900 pages. And my problem with that, again, just like The Extractionist, John Bruner did it way long ago. So it reminded me a lot of Stand on Zanzibar, which John Bruner wrote in 1969. And this is a climate change epic And it is frightening and it is a warning, but I really feel like it could have been done in 500, 600 pages. There was just a lot of fluff. And then there was some experimenting. Like there was one chapter that had these text boxes and it was irritating as shit. And it didn't work at all. At all. It was terrible. It was a terrible idea. And yeah. So a lot of people think this is a masterpiece and you're hearing a lot of masterpiece talk. I wouldn't go that far. A nonfiction book on the same subject. The Heat Will Kill You First, The Life and Death on a Scorched Planet by Jeff Goodall. This is the most important book I read this year. And if you get a blurb from Kim Stanley Robinson, who wrote Ministry of the Future, he was basically trying to make the same point. So that was the science fictional version of making this point, but it's basically about how hot our planet's getting. And you know, when the whole world is freaking out about Taylor Swift going to a football game, and like this is the book that everybody should be reading, everybody should be talking about because the planet's getting hotter and we need to do something about it. And honestly, like this book should be given away. Like the government should be giving this I believe in socializing this book and making the point to everyone. That would be awesome. That should happen. All right, we're getting there. We're in September. I took a break from Star Trek audiobooks for a Star Wars audiobook. And this was Star Wars: The High Republic Into the Dark by Claudia Gray, who's one of my favorite Star Wars authors. She's a great author. Her original work is great. And this is like combining, this is a High Republic novel set a couple hundred years before the Skywalker saga. So it has Yoda, but that's about it. And man, this is good stuff. It's like deep connections to the Force. There's a librarian Jedi character who just wants to be in the library. And there's parts of it that are kind of like aliens, like Cameron's aliens. Good stuff. Liked it. Enjoyed listening to it. Next read I had was another Clash books, label mate with The Last Night to Kill Nazis. Everything Darkness Eats by Eric LaRocha. LaRocha. LaRocha? I think it's LaRocha. This is a classic horror novel with a monster that offers you everything you could want. So it has like a little bit of Damnation Game, a little bit of Needful Things. It's kind of a Faustian bargain kind of novel. It's great. It's really, really good. It's a very good horror novel. I really liked it. And the tension for the gay characters living in a small town was really good too. I really like this book. I was trying to get Eric on the podcast and we just couldn't connect timing wise. So don't know what happened with that. I tried to get him on the podcast. I really did. So Never Whistle at Night is the next book I read, which is an indigenous dark fiction anthology. So it's Native American, North American writers, a lot of Canadian writers, edited by homie of the podcast, Shane Hawk and Theodore C. Van Alst. I did a whole episode of the podcast on this, recorded live at Mysterious Galaxies. I hosted the book event, a book launch for this. This has been on the bestseller, the indie bookstore bestseller list for 10 weeks. It's been on the Washington Post bestseller list. It's great. It doesn't need me promoting it, but I am. It's really good. So, and check out my interview with Shane. I'm really happy with it. And next, I read Suborbital 7 by John Shirley. I did a book tour with mini book tour with John for this book. And so I heard him talk a lot about it. I did an interview with him on this year's podcast about the book, and it's great. It's really good science fiction action. It's global politics meets Apollo 13. Very tense, nerve-wracking science fiction. Loved it. Great character work. Yeah, really good stuff. Next, I read also on the podcast this year, Infinity Gate by M.R. Carey. And this will definitely be in my top reads of the year episode. So you'll hear more about it then. This is as epic in scope. He's like setting up the world building of like a Star Trek, a Dune, like that deep of a world, and it never leaves Earth. It's a space opera that never leaves Earth. I went into it cold. I recommend that you do. I'm going to end up talking about it in the best reads of the year, but and I did an interview with Mike Carey about this book. I highly recommend it. It's one of the it's 500 pages. It's super breezy 500 pages. And maybe because I read Sorbo 7 and Infinity Gate, which both ruled and were great, right before I read Ascension by Nicholas Binge, Binge, Ascension, I did not like this book. And I really wanted to because Stephen King said really nice things about it on Twitter, X, whatever. And I wanted to like it. It breaks narrative rules a lot because it's supposed to be epistolary. So the chapters start off as novels, but then like the text does things no letter would ever do. And so that drove me nuts. And that might be just a writer problem, but the story was pretty good. It's a very weird science fictional horror kind of thing. And it has some really cool, interesting things, kind of first contact things. I love the concept. Did not like the execution. An editor should have said no. If you want to make it epistolary, then start off the chapters with a letter and kind of like an ellipse and then get into the third person. But don't say it's all a letter and then just like have the text like not behave like a letter at all because it didn't behave like a letter at all. And so yeah, but you know who else broke the rules? Narrative rules a little bit was Stephen King and Holly. Now, I liked Holly overall. I just there were a couple times where King did things like he explained what was happening to another character that the point of view character would know nothing about, and it didn't make any sense. And I was like, whoa, he should know better. But you know, Uncle Stevie, Holly for the most part was a good horror novel, and I really enjoyed it. So overall, I liked it. My favorite novels that he's written in the most recent period are Doctor Sleep and Later. I'm not anti-recent Stephen King, although I haven't been as happy lately with some of the episodes. I loved Later, though. I loved Later. So, and I read Holly on my way to Metal Swap. So I have to I sold books with Cody Goodfellow at the Heavy Metal Swap Meet. And so I have a distinct memory of starting the first 100 pages on the way there. And then the next book I read was I took a train trip up to Ojai with my wife, Carrie. And the book I read on the way there was Alien Enemy of My Enemy by Mary Sangiovanni. It is a very cool alien novel. I'm kind of jealous of Mary for getting to write an alien novel. And she did a great job. It's really good. It's, you know, I was excited to see her do some science fiction. There's some science fictional elements in there that are really cool. I liked it. And then on the way back from Ojai, I read most of Vertical by Cody Goodfellow. And I'm interviewing Cody for this podcast tomorrow. So I'm assuming this will come out first. And Vertical is one of my top reads of the year. It is a really tense thriller. And I loved it. It's very good. I'll say more about it in the best reads of the year, but it's a group of like urban explorer pranksters who climb one of the tallest buildings in the world in Moscow, and it's not finished, and there's gangsters and action, and it's pretty good. The next audiobook I listened to, and I don't usually like to listen to audiobooks of stuff. I like listening to audiobooks of stuff like Star Trek and Star Wars because if I zone out a little bit, I know the characters really well, and or if I have to pay attention to something else, like like wait for watch to cross the street or something, that if I don't have to pay attention super close. And I thought Robots of Dawn would fit for that by Isaac Asimov, and yeah, it was interesting because I've reread the Robot trilogy over the last couple of years, and Naked Sun I read in 20, I guess I took a couple of years off because I read Naked Sun during lockdown, which was the second book in the series. And Robots of Dawn is a little creepy knowing what we know about how Asimov was like grabby and like a little bit sexist. And this book is very sexist. It's weird. And I wrote a review of it, and I know I had some people complaining that it was more my thoughts about love about Asimov being a creeper. But I think it comes off in the text. So, anyways, that's Robots of Dawn by Isaac Asimov. I recommend my review there because I really don't have, I don't know. I said a lot in there about my feelings about Asimov. And I don't think Robots of Dawn held up as well as I remembered because there's less going on in it than I remembered. It's a lot of philosophizing about sex and robots, and it's weird. Next, I read a brand new cozy gaslight mystery called The Mimicking of Known Successes. It's a very Sherlock Holmesy type of mystery. The gimmick, though, is it's set on Jupiter, and there's some really cool world building I really liked. This is The Mimicking of Known Successes by Malika Ann Alder, and I really do like this book a lot. It's interesting, it's short, it's a quick read. It's supposed to be like a Sherlock Holmesy type mystery set in this weird post-climate apocalypse, end of the earth, humans trying to survive in these like domes on Jupiter. It's very weird. Liked it. Also on that Ojai trip, I read Last Action Heroes, The Triumphs, Flops, and Feuds of Hollywood's Kings of Carnage by Nick Desemlian, who I know from the Empire podcast mostly. And it's funny because I read most of it on that trip to Ojai, but then didn't finish it till later. The thing about this book is that I know a lot of this stuff. I know the history of action movies. So if you don't know the history of action movies in the 80s, then it's probably a really good read. The one big thing that I learned that I didn't know was that Von Damme wanted to call himself Frank Cujo as his acting name, which is hilarious. I didn't know that before. Frank Cujo. All right, November, I read Mayfly by CJ Lead, which is like a feminist retelling of American Psycho. And wasn't my thing. It's very well written. CJ Lead is very talented, and I look forward to reading what she does in the future. But I wasn't really into this concept or this thing. I objectively know this book is good. It just didn't work for me. Next, I listened to a Star Trek Picard radio drama written by Kirsten Beyer and Mike Johnson called No Man's Land. This was like a radio drama for Seven and Raffi, and it was weird. But Jeri Ryan and Michelle Hurd, like, playing their characters really well. But the thing with radio dramas is people talk unnaturally in order to explain things because there's a science to dialogue and radio drama, and I wasn't into that. It's not their fault. They did the best they could, but you know, I almost feel like this should have been a comic book. The story, it was a good Star Trek story, though. I'll give them that. Next, one of the best horror reads of the year, Whale Fall by Daniel Kraus. I heard on the Talking Scared podcast, the host, McNeil, I can't remember his first name. He said that this wasn't horror. That's bullshit. It's definitely a horror novel. I cannot believe he said it wasn't horror. I'm working on getting Daniel on around the time of the paperback release of Whale Fall. A diver looking for his father who died on a dive. He's looking for his father's body, dealing with the grief of his father who died during the lockdown, and he gets swallowed by a whale, and his oxygen keeps him alive. It's a retelling of the story of Jonah and the whale. It's really good. It's great. I don't know what else to say about that. One of the retro reads of the year, I read this around Thanksgiving, was Where the Late Birds Sang by Kate Wilhelm. Kate Wilhelm's role in the history of science fiction is very important. She was one of the co-founders of the Clarion Workshop. She's very important. I didn't, I the concept of this book was great. The execution, it's very thin. It's very old school writing in the sense that very thin character development, very little description. I kind of got lost sometimes in this novel. What was going on? I liked what it was trying to say. It's a eco-apocalypse novel about this post-collapse society where they start cloning people instead of reproducing naturally. It's interesting. I just didn't think it won the Hugo Award that year. I'm not sure that I thought it was deserving. Children of Dune was nominated the same year, and I really like Children of Dune. A lot of people don't like Children of Dune. But I might have given it to Children of Dune that year, or voted for Children of Dune. Next, I read Deep Sky by Yumi Kitsui, I think is how her name's pronounced. Deep Sky. This was a very vanilla science fiction novel. It's very by the numbers, mainstream science fiction novel, modern mainstream science fiction novel. So it has all the things that, you know, it's good. Like we're getting diverse voices in science fiction, and that's good. And that's a good thing for this novel that it has a half Jap, you know, a Japanese American character, and it's all women leads, and that's all parts of this novel that are good. The parts that are not good about this novel is that it's very paint by the numbers science fiction concepts, and you know, it feels a little like manufactured to be modern science fiction, if that makes sense. I don't know. Anyways, next I read a novella, The Ghost in the Bone. Limited edition Felix Castor novella by Mike Carey that Mike was kind enough to send me. And this is the sixth Felix Castor, the first Felix Castor novel in like 13 years. And if you don't know Felix Castor, he's very similar to John Constantine. It's a urban London exorcist. This was very cool. Very good story. It had a few moments that were really creepy. Next, I read Horror Library by Eric J. Guignard, Volume 8. Horror short stories. His short story anthologies are always good. They're always high quality. So Horror Library, Volume 8. Can you tell I'm getting towards the end here? So I'm the next audiobook I'd listened to was Don't Fear the Reaper by Stephen Graham Jones. I'm not a huge fan of the slasher genre, so I think Stephen, you know, he's a great writer. And I love Mongrels and The Only Good Indians. But the slasher thing is just not as exciting for me. However, I did like Don't Fear the Reaper better than My Heart is a Chainsaw. And My Heart is a Chainsaw was a book that I acknowledge was a 5-star book, but it just wasn't for me. Kind of like Mayfly is a very good book, but just not for me. And I thought I liked, there was less of the throwing slasher references everywhere. And that was in My Heart is a Chainsaw. So I appreciated Don't Fear the Reaper a little bit more. Jay Daniels has grown up a little bit, and I think the book grew up a little bit with her. So I really like Don't Fear the Reaper. I'm excited to get the third book eventually. Next, I read a nonfiction book called Dawn of the Mindful Universe, A Manifesto for Humanity's Future by Marcelo Gleister, which is like, yeah. This book could have been an essay, and it was a book. And it's all about like how we need to use science to think globally, not locally, basically, is the point. And I think it could have been an essay. It could have been a quote instead of a whole book. Next, one of the best reads of the year, Neom by Lavi Tidar, an Israeli-born British science fiction writer. And this feels old school. This was great science fiction set in the Central Station universe that he created. And Neom is awesome. And you will hear more about it on the Best Reads of the Year podcast for sure. It's set in future Saudi Arabia in this high-tech city called Neom that is kind of like outside of the religious law of Saudi Arabia. And then there's like robots, and there's this is the most Philip K. Dick book I've read in a long time. Not Philip K. Dick movie paranoid concept. I mean, Philip K. Dick execution and humor, and there's inside jokes and Easter eggs for Philip K. Dick and Rudy Rutger and like all kinds of stuff. It's very cool. Next, I read a nonfiction book called Interstellar by Avi Loeb, who's my favorite astronomer. And again, this could have been an essay or an article, but it's basically like arguing for like how we need to be an interstellar species and reach out to the stars. I agree. I'm more into doing it through telescopes than spaceships, but whatever. Next was a Mark Rothenberg gift, which was In the Miso Soup by Ryu Murakami, which is like serial killer meets 8mm set in Japan. It was good. Not super incredible, but good. And then the books that I'm still reading that I haven't finished, but will finish by the end of the year, are Augmented Volume 1 from my publisher Choir. And yes, I have a story in here called Happy Click Click. And I'm not going to review my own story, but the best story that I read in here so far is Urgent Care by Andrew Turek, which is like a chase story set in a future. And then there was one by a Ukrainian author. I'll Keep Your Voices Low. Vychenzova Lazverin. I'm terrible with names. Yeah, that's a great story too. And then I'm reading a really weird book called Massive Wild, which is a science fiction novel, interdimensional thing. It's kind of like Infinity Gate, but weirder. I think I'm going to come down on that. They're in the zeitgeist trying to do the same thing, and then Infinity Gate's like the better version of the concept. Although I'm having fun with it. It's very funny. So yeah, that's all the books I read in 2023. If you made it this far, my next novel is called People's Park. People's Park, the release party will be in Indiana on April 7th at Morgan Storm Books in Bloomington, Indiana. And that novel takes place in Bloomington. It's a love letter to freaks and weirdos. And it's really cool stuff. I'm really excited about that book. And then the day after the book release party, the planet's giving us a solar eclipse to watch. So if you come to Indiana and do that, I'm working on trying to do an event with Ray Bradbury Center because a bunch of my science fiction author friends are coming into town for it. So hopefully we'll see you there. Coming up next on the podcast, the best reads of 2023 and Vertical with Cody Goodfellow. So, yeah, see you then. And thanks for, and again, if you made it this far, you can donate on Buy Me a Coffee. I really appreciate it because I put a lot of time and energy into putting this podcast out, and I don't sell ads and don't do all of that stuff because I find those annoying. And so if you enjoy the work, appreciate it, I'd love a donation. If not, don't worry about it. You can always buy my book. I appreciate that too, because you get something out of it too, because I promise you a good story. So yeah, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.